I'd like now to, with your indulgence, to ask two young gentlemen. They disappeared. What happened? Well, there's one here. We'd just like a little bit of a panel discussion. Have some questions we're going to ask them, and maybe some questions from the floor as well, just to give us a sense of some of the issues, because if we're not ready to see what we're doing well and what we have to strengthen and what maybe could be improved, then we really can't advance our level of accomplishment and achievement in the whole educational process for ourselves and our children. I also would like to remind everyone there are these cards available. They're a very brief, quick review, strengthening emunah on one side, just the basics of some of the things that were talked about, and strengthening bitochen on the other side, which was a lot of last night's conversation. And I think that they're very beneficial to review quickly. Some people have already put them on their refrigerators, as you choose, but they should be available there. Okay. I'd like to introduce Rabbi Yaakov Friedman and Rabbi Hillel Gebera, two very fine, distinguished, accomplished yeshiva bochrim. Rabbi Yaakov, product of the American yeshiva system, Canada and the United States. Rabbi Hillel, a product of the Israeli yeshiva system, and spent some years yet in the United States as well. Why don't you have a seat? What? No, I'll stand here. It's okay. All right, we put together some questions, and really any input from the audience is also very much appreciated. Let's just begin. Life today is full of temptations, even in a beautiful community like Detroit. How can we inspire and help our children to maintain self-control and ward off the lure of temptations? Would you like to address that?
First, I'd just like to thank Rabbi Yellen for hosting us for a beautiful Shabbos, him and his Rebbetzin and his family. Thank you. I don't have any concrete thoughts, but I guess just things that I've seen over the years. Maybe might resonate with some people, but I feel like in this generation where things are just very accessible, every pleasure and every temptation. So it could be perhaps in previous generations they didn't even discuss the benefits and maybe there wasn't such an emphasis on discussing the beauty and the benefits of doing mitzvahs. Maybe there's more of a focus on limud haTorah, specifically on that. But nowadays, when things are just so accessible, with a nanosecond, somebody can access whatever he wants. So if we're able to build within our children a strong sense of the of why it's best to refrain from following the temptation, and they're able to access that. I mean, that so that takes constant work of continuously speaking about the benefits of Torah mitzvahs, the benefits of not pursuing our taivis and at times when it's negea. So I just feel like that could be a benefit.
Want to add something to that?
There's another nekuda of growing up religious, very difficult. Part of that is the fact that no one ever asked us, do you want to be religious? None of us really ever chose this lifestyle. So raising kids or talmidim to lead them in the right way, but also give them the feeling of, this is what I want to do. Giving that feeling of choice creates a much stronger foundation, to the extent that it's easier for you to fight off to the temptation when it's something I want to do. It's not something I was told to do. It's something I want to do, and this is how I want to lead my life. That's also something that makes our foundation much stronger.
Okay. Yes.
So I love what you just said.
Thank you.
How can we give them a choice when we feel like this is the right way, especially for Paul Chu, but for anyone?
Right.
Like, how do you do that? Do you have any ideas?
I don't know. I don't have any kids. I'm a kid, so I don't really know. I could just tell you how, seeing it from my perspective, I don't know. It's a very hard balance. It's a very fine line between giving someone that feeling to not leading someone. And, you know, kids, we don't have enough life experience. We don't have enough knowledge. We don't always understand things. We think we understand things, and then 5 years pass and we say, wow, I understand things so differently now. This is how, you know, life progresses. We understand things in a different way. We get different perspectives. I don't know. I'm saying it's ping pong, you know? It's giving it here and taking away from here. It's certain stuff, you know, you feel like this is very important. I want to give more room here for the kid, or the opposite, you know. I don't have an answer.
Okay. Could I just try to add something to that? And that is as follows. First of all, I think it's very important to know there is a definition of happiness. Everybody wants to be happy. And the definition of happiness, I mentioned this at some point, is feeling good about oneself. Validation. When a person feels good about himself, that's the shorish of the word osher, aleph shin resh. It's very, very powerful in terms of making a person happy. One of the ways we give people a good feeling about themselves is when they feel that they're in control. They have choices. Now, this poses a very difficult problem for us because we want to do that on the one hand. On the other hand, we certainly don't want them to have every choice in the world. And sometimes, if we can give them some choices within the realm of what we are comfortable with, it can make a difference. For example, if it's, I don't know, again, in this community, if they have a choice between two schools, just like that, and they should feel that they made the decision. But how we know in life, when you make a decision yourself, you make it work. It works much better. You have no one to blame, so you have to make the best of it. So a choice like that. We want to learn with our children. So instead of saying we must learn today at 3 o'clock, would you like to learn tonight? Or would you like to learn tomorrow in the afternoon? Just to create. Hillel told me something very interesting. You want to tell that story? It's very primitive for a young child, but I think it's a beautiful thing.
I was with my brother and sister-in-law and his kids, and they have a 4-year-old little girl. And my sister-in-law tells her, Tzipora, I want to put on your shoes. No, no, she runs away. So she goes, Tzipora, do you want to put on your shoes or should I put on your shoes? And then she says, I'll put on my shoes. But that wasn't an option. She said, I don't want to put on my shoes. But she just shifted from, you need to put on your shoes, to a choice. Do you want to put it or should I put it? And it was like a whole switch in like 1 second. So that's just, I was amazed by how just giving a little kid a choice to feel like he's in control could change the whole mood.
Just another point, which I think is very helpful, and which I think Rabbi Yaakov indicated before that it hasn't been prevalent until now, and that is giving kids a sense of why they should want to do it. Today we live in a generation of what's in it for me. We don't have philosophers anymore. We are all in a world of psychology, of instant instant gratification. And therefore, if they understand the benefits, why will I be happier? Why will I be a better person? Why will I feel better about myself if I learn, if I do mitzvahs, if we can convey that, it makes much more, it makes it much more palatable. It makes them want to make that decision. And even though we don't give them the decision, hey, do you want to be Jewish or Goyish? But there is a certain realm where they're going to be making a decision because they feel it's to their benefit. And there's so many opportunities to do so, both on a general sense. You know, most yeshiva bochurim will not be able to, I mean, younger, I don't know, older is different, but what are we here in this world for altogether? What's the purpose of creation? What are we doing here? And if we hear that it's about perfecting ourselves and making ourselves into better human beings, that might be attractive, because the human being deep down wants to hear that. And when they hear about specific mitzvahs, what Shabbos can do for them, what tefillah can do for them, what tefillin can do for them, and there are so many svarim today, there's so much discussion about these things, that could also help, I think, in the decision process. Okay, let's go on. Today, so many children and adults are feeling overwhelmed, so overwhelmed. What can be done to prevent and deal with such feelings? And this is something that's very true today. The pressures that are on them, the feeling of, you know, this is what I must do, as was indicated here, this wasn't necessarily even my own choice of what I wanted to do. And they feel this very overwhelmed feeling. There's this sense of, I used the word and I regretted it as I used it a moment ago, perfection, you know, perfection. And we know what perfectionism does to people. And this, how can we help them to feel a little bit more comfortable about what they're doing and not to feel this overwhelming pressure? Because, and this I can testify over the years in dealing with so many people who have gone off the derech, that one of the major causes is when they feel overwhelmed with pressure. It's just too much. It's like if it's too hot in the kitchen, they just run out. They want to...
Yeah, he does speak loud.
Yeah.
Everyone can hear me?
Yeah, with the mic, it's good.
I don't have much to say. I'll just share a story. I learned in a yeshiva called Yeshivat Afula. It's up north in Israel. Not anymore, closed down. The yeshiva was Moshe Dov Harris, and I was talking to him about an issue I had a difficulty with. And, you know, he was talking to me about it, and he was telling me how to, you know, to address it and deal with it. And then, like, you know, I'm about to leave, and he throws it out there. He's like, try it for 10 years. So I laughed. I thought it was a funny joke, but it dawned on me. Like, this isn't a joke, you know, it's not from here to tomorrow. You know, we live here, hopefully, ad mevesrim. To try to become the better person. It's not something we create. I need to be. You don't need to be. You just need to try to improve at your pace, that you're capable. There's no, by this age, I need to be here, and it doesn't work that way. You know, we need to try every day, whatever we can. There's no set time for things.
Maybe just adding on to what Hill is saying, I think maybe unhealthy expectations. I remember when I was in ninth grade, I was very excited. I was in yeshiva and I wanted to have I wanted to do chesed in yeshiva. So somebody was running the money change gemach. Basically, someone had a $5 bill and he needs change for the machine. So he'd come over to me and, you know, I would give him the change. I was just something that I was very excited about. And one of my older brother's Rebbe, who was the Rebbe in the Beis Medrash there, found out about it, and he told my brother that I shouldn't do it because maybe it would be mavatal me from learning. And I was a ninth grade kid. That really was, I think, an unhealthy expectation, meaning kids are kids, and even adults are. Everyone had, like, you know, that was something that resonates with me as something that could be an unhealthy expectation, too much, let's say, you have to be learning the whole day. I mean, probably take off some time to give some change to somebody. And also, I just think that another thing is that our generation, I think, is also, they're pretty serious, b'etzem, meaning they care. They care about Hashem, and when things get too overwhelming, let's say they face a difficult time or something happens, then they can't deal with it. And if they're not convinced that Hashem still loves them and cares about them, even when they're not performing to where they would like to be, or where the people who are expecting them to perform a certain way, when they feel that they're not meeting those expectations, that it's very easy to veer off. Again, it's just, I came across a Reb Chaim Volozhin, Nefesh HaChaim, in Shar Beis. He says that, on the contrary, when somebody sins, Hashem loves them even more, because he's like a father that's petrified for his son. Hashem knows what a sin is doing to a person. When someone sins, says like he's mace, and he gives a mashal like somebody, like a father who witnessed his son got drunk, and his son collapsed, and you know there was a question if his son was going to make it through, and he describes the father's fear and pain and anguish and love for his child while he's going through that, and so if we have a, I guess, appreciation that Hashem still loves us even when we're not performing to where we like to, so I think that can help.
I'd just like to add one point. Rashi at the end of Koheles, after Shlomo HaMelech passed the whole world, Soif Dora Kol Nishma Es Elokim Yiro Es Mitzvosov Shmor Ki Ze Kol HaOdom. Says after everything is said and done, fear Hashem, do the mitzvahs. This is the essence, and Rashi explains the purpose for which man was created. But Rashi says an Elokim Yiro Ma Shetucha Laasei VeLibcho LaShomayim. Rashi defines lechatchila. This is not some cop-out, some fallback position. Lechatchila, the definition of yira shomayim, fear of heaven, ma shetuchel asei, doing the best as we heard, doing the best you can, v'libcho lashomayim. I'm always looking to improve. I'm looking for help from Hashem. I'm looking to grow, but it's ma shetuchel asei. And if that lesson alone would be learned today, and our youth would get that sense, I think it could transform this sense of overwhelming pressure to something that's far more palatable and enjoyable, and allow it to be meaningful in their lives. We have another issue here, which is a little bit related. Forgive me for this painful quote, and I hear it unfortunately too often. I love my child, I just don't like him. End quote. What do you think we could do to maintain unconditional love and acceptance in our children? And what can we do to make sure that we convey that message to them?
Sometimes we see our kids as like, you know, our medal. You know, he does good, I look good. He does bad, I look bad. Makes sense that we see things that way. He's our kid, he's our student. End of the day, we're different people. And we think differently, we feel differently about things. Kids go through journeys, they try to figure out stuff that you don't always agree with. When a kid comes home with a good score on his test, so, wow, you're proud of him, that's amazing, but it's not such a big deal, like, he brought a good score home. But when someone falls and he messed up and he came home with a bad score or he did something stupid, something happened that you like batsim you, the kid would think that you're not going to be proud of him. When you show the love then, when you, okay, don't worry, it's all good, you know, we'll pick up from here. Tomorrow is a new day. If you give over that message then the kid really understands, and you know, he doesn't get overwhelmed and scared, and he really sees the love when it's hard to see the love. That I feel like is a really important message when a kid, you know, just when he feels bad as it is, you know, just give him a hug. It's all good. You don't need to justify what he did, but also support him at the same time.
I have nothing to add. I think that after that, everybody will accept me, even if I don't say something.
Sorry. Let's move on. Sometimes we find ourselves bashing the outside world and its influence. Does this bashing have a positive or a negative effect? Please explain and expand upon it.
Again? So besides for the point that Yaakov mentioned at the beginning that, you know, we need to show our kids the beauty of religion and the positivity and Hashem's love, I just think that, like, something good, you don't need to bash something else. It's good. When your focus is on talking to me and telling me how bad the outside world is, and your focus isn't telling me how good this world we're living in is, you're giving off a lack of confidence. Kids aren't stupid. If again and again and again you're focused on not on what you are and what you're living in, you're focused on what's you're not living in, how bad that is, you're giving off that I don't have enough to sell. I need to tell you he's not good in order for me to be good. If you're good, he doesn't need to be bad for you to be good. So yeah, the outside influence needs to be addressed. It's everywhere. But I just don't think that should be the focus for a few reasons. I mean, this lack of confidence you give off is a big point, I think.
There was a time in my life where I maybe was more used to looking at things that in the context of what we have and what they don't have. So I had a camper that he was already older, he was like 18 years old, and he claimed to be an atheist. And, you know, he had a teacher that was convincing him. And I was like trying to tell him about the beauty of Torah and Mitzvah. I was trying to tell him, like, just look at the life, like a family life, the values and everything. And he started telling me, he's like, well, you know, I think that you could have that. There are people who have values who are not B'nai Torah. And people could also have those, you know, a nice family life without. And everything that I was telling him, he was just like saying that it's not, you don't only have that from the Torah. And I realized that that argument is not so strong because, you know, you could be right. Somebody could go to the secular world and see values there. Or sometimes seemingly values, they might not really be values, but they can seem as values. So I just think that as a foundation, when somebody does go out to the real world and they see something that impresses them, or they see that things sometimes, you know, that not everybody in the secular world is, you know, totally valueless. So then they're not as convinced in that Torah is the only way to live a value life, which. I mean, reality it is, but there are values in the other world, and if we're just bashing the outside world, when they do see values there, they might start to question what they had always thought previously. Okay.
How can we deal with the negative ideas and feelings that our children have about Hashem and Yiddishkeit? Related a little bit, but...
Okay, so, I mean, there's just one thing that me and Hillel were discussing over Shabbos. I think that's the danger of machlokes. When our children are trying to connect with the idea of derechel darchei noyam, the chol nisi vayseh shalom, and they see in their surroundings, you know, even sometimes in their spiritual advisors, leanings towards machlokes that causes unrest, and somebody's pursuit to want to pursue the derechel darchei noyam because they don't feel that way. They don't see that. So I just think that that's one thing that we have to be careful about. Also, just with the reality of the fact that there, you know, sometimes people are. I met a girl on a plane. She was sitting next to me. She started hacking. She wanted to know how much Gehenim she's going to have. Basically, that was like all. That was what she was like. Am I going to go to heaven for this? Am I going to go to heaven for this? She wasn't using that word, but I just think that, unfortunately, that's also, especially coming around the times of Yom Ha'Ra'im, becomes a fear. We have fear, there's unfortunate circumstances that we go through. There is a reality of Gehenna, and I just think that if we're able to, Rabbi Cohen discussed this a lot, paint our world and the foundation of Olam Chesed Ibane, and everything that happens in this world is in the context of that Chesed. The Altav Slabatka was a fanatic about it. Throughout many of his shmuzin, he's just talking about the Chesed Hashem, everything's Chesed. Even in one, he brings down a medrash that where it says on the pasuk, "Hinei Toiv Ma'od." The medrash says, "Zeh Gehenim." This is Gehenim, and he says, "Gehenim that they're mahalalim u'mashabchim." I said, "And Gehenim, they're singing Halal to Hashem, they're praising Hashem, and they're saying Yafa Dante, Yafa Zachisa, Yafa Takanas Gehenim." They're saying beautiful, like it's beautiful that we got Gehenim. Because they see, and he actually, it's a very strong lesson, it says, Ve'ein liros hevdel, meaning Gehenim is so beautiful, in the context of what it's doing and helping us for in order to achieve greatness so that we can move higher and higher in Gen Eden. As he says, Ve'ein liros hevdel klal bein ha'idim l'gehenim, bein ha'idim l'tadikim b'gan Eden, la'idim for the Rosham of Gehenim. And if things are painted with that perspective, and also let's say, Ari Cohen mentions often in Yeshaya, it speaks about, I think Perek Nandalad, it says that, Berega Kat, Hashem says, Berega Kat, he's talking about when the Gula comes, Berega Kat and Azavtech, I forgot about you for a second, Uvarachamim Gdel Makabsech, and I gathered you with great mercy. And so the obvious question is, Hashem didn't forget about us for a second. We have Tach V'Tat, we have the Spanish Inquisition, we have the Holocaust, we have Arayay Mazed, the persecution that we face. And he says, based on the doc, that connected the beauty and the simcha that we're going to have when the gula comes, we're going to look back and it's going to be like, oh, that was just a fleeting second. That was just that was a second of pain. So if things are just taught to us in a perspective that everything is from Hashem's chesed and ava, then that helps us to deal with when there are issues that arise. It helps us to be able to face those.
I don't have much to add. Just a story. I was sitting one Shabbos with a few Breslov Hasidim. I didn't know anyone. And they were very open. Everyone was sharing about themselves, life insights. And this guy was, this guy was talking about you need to do itbodedut, just time alone to think, connect to Hashem. And talk to Hashem, to relate to Him. Itbodedut doesn't need to be in the forest. You could sit in your room and just think and have a conversation with Kadosh Baruch Hu. So this one guy was like, talk to Hashem? I don't feel Him. Like, what do you mean? Talk to Hashem. So the guy answers him, so tell Him that. Tell Him that. He's there. You have an issue? Any issue, it's the whatever you're feeling, let it out. So if you're having a negative feeling, all what Yaakov said is a good way to deal with it. But also, letting things out to Him. He knows what's in your heart. So you're not going to become a bad person. Whatever's in your heart and in your brain, if you say it or if you express it, isn't going to go away if you do or not. That's all.
There's a question we can ask.
Yes.
How do we deal with what seems to be prevalent in the schools that kids are afraid to ask and express doubts, that they would be called apikoros if they were to say, how do I know Hashem's here? We had questioned some guests we had recently, what was on in their school. They were asked. So you don't ask. The teacher won't answer. The answer from the teacher is, we don't ask those kinds of questions. And this is, I guess, very broad-based in all kinds of schools. Whole gamut of Jewish day schools, yeshiva, that the kids are afraid to express doubts, that teachers are afraid to answer or don't know how to answer. But this is, as my husband understands, one of the biggest reasons that kids say they go off the derech because nobody would answer their questions and they told they were wrong to ask.
What do I deal with that?
I don't know. It's a very valid issue. I don't know I'm saying, you know, you can't change the world, but close to home, saying, motivate sincerity. Whatever you're feeling, if you express it or not, it's gonna be there, you know? If you think a certain way, if it's not that way you're supposed to think, it's still how you think, it's still how you feel. If you motivate people to say what they think and to express how they feel, and accept differences and diversity, like you said, it's key in any relationship, and it's in it, with humans. It's key in any relationship with Hashem, right?
But it's part of the school system.
Yeah,
kids,
I know.
Ask their questions for their kids that are asked to leave the schools because they're told, we don't talk, you know, we don't ask those questions. You can't question. So how can a kid get answers? Because all kids have questions.
I agree with you 100%. I'm saying, I don't know what to do about schools. The only thing I could say is, you know, at home, that's the best you can give. Sincerity, you know, creates stronger relationships with people, with Hashem, and it also gives peace. It puts you in a comfortable place. Whenever people speak how they feel, there's no question marks floating. There's no uncomfortableness. It's just, you know, we're people, we're different, we feel things, we think things, and it's all good. You know, it may not be the right place, but I could grow from there. I could graduate this thought. I don't think the same way I thought a year ago. I don't think the same way I thought 10 years ago. It's a process. And okay, this is how you feel now. This is how you think. It's all good. You're the same person. We could work with that. We could move from here. Can you change the schools? I don't have no idea that Rabbi Cohn tries to do. I don't know.
This is a rough one. First of all, I think what Hillel suggested is really very, very wise in terms of at least the home environment should be one that's open to questions. And if the parents don't necessarily feel fully adequate in answering the questions, they should look into the answers. They should consult with people or with information which would give them the answers, and that information is available. One need not be afraid that our children have such questions that they're going to really shake up the world of Yadus, which has been around since the beginning of creation. So, you know, there's nothing serious. Most of the questions are recycled. We actually have a piece where we have 100 questions that kids ask, and, you know, it's very hard to come up with a new question. So the home can help. But on the other hand, I think we have to collectively exert pressure on the educational establishment that they have to reckon with this issue more directly. I happen to have this afternoon a session, I think it's right here, with Mechanchim from the city, and I'm certainly, I don't know your name, but I will quote you, you know, and bring it up, and it's something that they certainly should be focused on. Unfortunately, sometimes we're afraid of questions because we don't think we have the right answer, or we don't think our answer will be accepted or convincing enough, and we're afraid to do more damage and so forth. But you know, we have no choice. We have to try to deal with these things. But creating at home that sense of validation that yes, your questions are important. You must get it out. You must express what you think. There's no crime in thinking this way. It's very normal to think this way, and now let's deal with it. That can go a long way. In terms of the school, there is, of course, the consideration that they don't want to discuss certain issues because it will affect others who are not thinking about these issues. But what at least should be recommended is that when a student has certain questions, that the teacher should, in private, deal with that student. And, of course, that's assuming that the teacher knows how to deal with these questions. And if that's not so, then they should find out where to. So I think that's a little bit of what we might be able to do. I know the hour is getting late. Let's just move to something else here. Here's a point that's of concern. How can we get our children to act sincerely out of love and appreciation of Hashem and His Torah, rather than because it's the tzura of a ben Torah or the tzura of a ben yeshiva, or this is just the way you have to act and conduct yourself and so forth?
I guess just one thing that comes to mind is when we present ideas in Yahadus and Hashkafa, is it presented in a frame of this is a Tzuras HaBen Torah or this is a Tzuras HaYeshiva and therefore you're doing it? Or is it presented as a way of connecting to Hashem and a way of connecting to Yiddishkeit? So I think that's a very, big point. When it almost sounds empty when we talk about Torah or Tzuras HaTorah, Tzuras HaBen Torah, and we don't explain what the Torah is, what the Torah teaches us, how the Torah is helping us in our life, and when things are presented as a way of connecting to Hashem and our avodas Hashem, then it's without that, it's difficult to really penetrate in a real way. Just something I would add is, Rabbi Cohn mentions, there's a letter from Rav Shach, and he's discussing the differences between previous generations and he was talking in a previous generation to this, but it's the Kol Shekein to this generation, that in previous generations, the wars that were being fought to keep people on the Derech HaTorah were ideological battles. There was communism, there was Zionism, there was things were fought. There was, of course, the Haskalah. Things were fought on an ideological level. Nowadays, he says, people just want to have. They want lasot chayim. They wanna have a life. They wanna have a geshmaka life. So if we present, so he basically says that nowadays we can't talk about, you know, this is for, you know, your olam haba. We need to actually give them a feeling that Torah is going to benefit them in this world, because that's what people need. And he says that's that's what he passes. That nowadays we're not supposed to be, just telling them about Olam Haba, because if you really want to fight them and you really want to get them, then you need to be able to prove to them how doing the Torah mitzvah is going to help them emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, and talking about all those benefits, they'll feel more connected.
Just like to add one thing. You know, many people are afraid to talk about the abstract concept of having a relationship with Hashem, when in reality, that's such a basic. The Gemara in Shabbos, when the Goy comes to Hillel and says, "Teach him the whole Torah regel achas," so the Gemara says, "Mad aloch sani lechavroch lo yisavit." That which you is hateful, don't do to your friend. This is kolat orakula v'idach birusha. The rest is just an explanation. Now go and learn. And Rashi in the first pshat says reyachav reyavicha al tazoiv, that chavrecho is referring to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. The essence of kolat orakula is that which is hateful to you. Don't do to Hashem. Don't betray the relationship with Hashem. Don't compromise that relationship with Hashem. Don't underestimate that relationship with Hashem. That relationship with Hashem and maintaining it is the essence of Kol HaTorah Kula. I want to share with you a little anecdote, which is, I was reminded of a Shabbos I hadn't thought of for years. Many years ago, before they started the first day school in Budapest, they had 40 years, there hadn't been a day school there. So I had the privilege of meeting with the Mechanchim, Mechanchos in Yerushalayim before they went to start the new school. And the speaker who spoke before me, I don't remember who it was, spoke about, make sure, don't mention the name of Hashem. because Hashem hasn't been present in Budapest for the last 40 years. I must admit, that's probably why I blocked out his name. You know, I was furious. And I got up trying to contain myself, and I said, you know, I must tell you, you must mention Hashem. And not only that, you must mention having a relationship with Hashem. That's critical. That's something that everybody craves. Everyone who's created, B'Tselem Elokim, craves that relationship with the one in whose image he is created. Anyway, okay, so that was a whole discussion about that, what have you. The end of the first week of school, I'm on the phone talking to the one who organized the whole project from New York, but the president of that foundation. And he says to me, he's unbeknownst to him, my session with the teachers, he didn't know what we discussed. But he says, I want to tell you a very interesting thing. The first day of school, there was a six-year-old girl, and she comes home, and she says, Mommy, Daddy, guess what? There's God in the world. And the family literally rejoiced. So this is something we have to keep in mind. And remember, one of the problems that we have, one of the problems that our kids get a sense of, that we're all focused on the next world. The next world is far away. Children have to see the relationship with Hashem that they can have in this world. That's so critical, that's so meaningful. I'll never forget when I was a little kid, my grandmother exploded on her, and she was laid up for months with burns. And I remember hearing all the time, I was a young kid, in the next world, it's going to be such a happy place. And I remember thinking as a kid, I don't want to wait to the next world. You know, I want it to be happy here. If we can give them that sense that Yiddishkeit can be exciting, can be meaningful, and they can be happy here, I think that makes all the difference. Okay, we'll take one more question. The hour is late. And that is as follows. I'm just going to skip over here. We have a lot more. Let's do this one. How can we expect our children to learn seriously if they don't know why it is so important? And here, before we turn to our experts over here, I just want to make a comment. And that is that we find that if you put a young man, a young student, on the spot, or if you put a young parent on the spot, or sometimes if you put an older grandparent on the spot, and you'll ask them, why is it that Limud HaTorah is of such primacy in Yadus, why that's such Talmud Torah, why this is the greatest thing, why this is the most important thing that we can do? I had a situation where someone came to me and he told me, he says, I couldn't answer my son didn't know the answer, the Rebbe couldn't give him an answer, and I asked my father, who's a Talmud Chacham, his grandfather, he couldn't give an answer. And how can we expect them to put such an emphasis on learning, to give up so much time for learning and effort for learning, and develop such a love of learning, unless they have a real clear sense of why they were learning? And I think that's something that we should comment about.
This question reminds me of a story. I was with a friend of mine a few years ago, and we were both learning yeshiva for many years. He was in yeshiva already, you know, I'd say at least, and since Beis Medrash, probably 15 years, maybe 10 to 15 years, and the discussion of why we learn came up, and he was getting very nervous. He was fighting me. He was like, because that's how we got close to Hashem. I said, how? What? And when I pushed this a little bit further, he felt very agitated. And I think that's normal. I think that's natural, especially if someone's doing something for a long time and you're not able to verbalize why you're doing it. I think it's very natural to feel this need to fight very strongly. Just one thing, I don't think we need to, when these questions do come up, I don't think we need to feel like we're right away knocked off our feet, because we have on who to rely. I mean, even if we don't know the answer to this question, we know that the Jewish nation is known as a smart nation, and we've had many, many giants, many big people who were doing this and devoting their whole lives to this. Then we could, even if we don't know the answer yet to this question, I think we could take refuge and still, you know, not feel so agitated, just knowing that we're on the right path. But just something that comes to mind is, also Rabbi Cohen mentions that davening is us talking to Hashem, and like when Torah is presented as davening is us talking to Hashem, and learning is Hashem talking to us, and us, you know, finding out what Hashem believes on, you know, a shor hamazik, an ox that goes in and gores somebody. It's we're finding it out, and it's presented about this is the Devar Hashem, this is what Hashem believes, and now we're on a mission to try to find out what Hashem believes. And I think it just brings us to the next thing, is that when Torah is presented in the framework of Mesira, we have a very nice picture hanging in Yeshiva with the Mesira going from Moshe Rabbeinu, Talmid to Yeshua, to all the way down every generation, Rishonim, you know, Tanoim, Amoraim, right? And then going all the Rishonim, Gaonim, Achronim, Rebbe to Talmud, all the way down now to 2020. And it just makes it very real. You feel like you're part of almost like a mission. There's a sense of responsibility when you see that clear transmission of Torah. That gives a much more of a sense of responsibility and even empowerment to go and you know find out why we're learning and also to involve ourselves in it.
I don't have much to add. I do think, though, that a big importance to learning that I only realized many years later, I started learning by Rabbi Cohen, and the learning is very analytical, and you know everything needs to be. You can't just say stuff. It needs to be profound. And then after learning like that for a few years, like it dawned on me that I'm not learning differently. I'm thinking differently. So understanding things, why am I doing it? What's the sources? Does it make sense? Creating a brain as a tool of thinking outside, you know, dealing with people, dealing with life, and having all kinds of thoughts that are outside of the learning are so important. And those tools, I feel like were created through the tzura, the way of learning. You learn anything. There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of depth in the Torah. And it just sharpens your mind to the extent that you don't only learn on a higher level, you think and live on a higher level, which I think is very important for the day-to-day life. So that's what you gain from the learning. This is not an actual explanation on how important learning is.
If I could just take a moment to close comment on this last issue. I think there's a few things that we have to be aware of. Number one, if we're aware that the Torah that we have, Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, is the Das Kel Elyon. These are the thinking, the values, the sensitivities, the purpose for creation, the goals for humanity, the goals for every tzelem elokim, the goals for every neshama that stood at Har Sinai. And we realize that we are, through this process, studying the Das Kel Elyon and imbibing the likeliness to Hashem. Now I become more godly because I'm more aware of his value system. And the awareness can't come in just a lecture. I hear this and this, do this, do this, do this, do this. I'm in the process of analyzing it. I'm in the process of concluding the halacha. I'm in the process of seeing how the halacha unfolds. And I participate, I add to it, I say a chiddush sometimes. I add my own svoro, my own neufach. This is mekasher me to the Torah, to the Mesorah of Doros, and to Maimon Har Sinai, and it's creating in me that sense that I am now molding myself in the Derech Hashem, in the thought process, in the values, in the whole system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has ordained for us. But there's something else too. I'd like to conclude with this. There's a hashpa that the learning has. You know, we don't realize how things penetrate us subconsciously as well. There's a very interesting comment of the Rabbeinu Simcha the Machzavitri. The Mishnah says, Toif Toiro im derech eretz, she'igiyas shnei mashkachas ovoim. That it's good to have Torah and derech eretz, a way of making a living, because the effort in both, a person won't come to sin. So the Rabbeinu Simcha says that we're talking about learning Hilchas Gzeila. Okay, we're learning Hilchas Gzeila. We're learning all about Gzeila. So he says, if you learn Hilchas Gzeila, you're not allowed to steal, and you have a shtikl parnoso, you have a derech eretz, you won't come to sin because you learned Hilchas Gzeila and you minimize your temptation, you won't come to sin. But the question is, what's the lotion of the Mishnah mashkachas ovoim? Yofet talmud toiv talmud toiv derech eretz, shi'igiya shneyem, the effort put into both will cause sin to be forgotten. It's not forgotten, it won't come to steal. I won't do it. I think the pshat is push it. When a person learns Teres Hashem, when I imbibe the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's values, it penetrates to the subconscious that it doesn't dawn on me to do something which is against the Dvar Hashem. Is Mashkachas Olam means that it wouldn't occur to me, how could you steal? If I didn't have a shtikl parnosos, I might think to steal, I don't have what to eat. But if I have a parnosa and I learn Hilchas Gzeila becomes beyond the pale of what I even can think of doing. It's much like I say sometimes, I'm afraid to ask, has anybody ever thought of murdering someone? Don't answer. So that's beyond the pale of our thoughts. It doesn't, it's Faltenstein, such a thing. The same thing every time we learn, whether it's we're learning Hilchas Shabbos, whether we're learning Hilchas Yom Tov, whether we're learning Hilchas Tefillah, and we're learning Chesed Mishpat, whatever it may be, it creates this sense of, such a sense of a deep appreciation of internalizing the Das Kel Elyon, that it doesn't even occur to me to violate it. And that's how a person molds his character and becomes a better person. So this is also another benefit that they have from Limud HaTorah. Agav, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, we spoke about it yesterday here in the shul, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta taught us that that's not enough just to rely on the learning of Shas for us, because we're remote from these values and we need something more intensive. And therefore he came up with this. Shoyim did it too. They made special sforim on different topics so that we can focus on a specific topic directly, collecting the Chazal that talk about it in one place and internalizing that message. But the Torah itself does it, and the specific emphasis on Musa does it, and together a person is constantly working on bettering himself. And I'd like to just conclude that since the issue of happiness is about feeling good about myself, if we convey to our children, as we heard from our panel here, in a way that is not pressurized, in a way, as Hillel put it, that allows time for growth, in a way, as Rashi put it, that it's mashetucha laseh v'libcha l'shamayim, then we give them this sense of, you have the greatest potential, and you can work at growing there. You don't have to be pressured to get there today, tomorrow, or the next day. It's all about a growth process. But in the process, a person can feel so good about himself because I'm constantly elevating myself, growing, making myself into a better person, making myself into a more godly person. And that can make all the difference in their lives. I want to thank you very much. Thank Rabbi Yellen again and his mishpocha for a wonderful Shabbos and for putting this all together. Thank Rabbi Klein for the unique experience that he offered me at Shalashudis. I was shocked that anybody was even there talking about Musa, but they all stayed. They must have a strong grip on them. Anyway, I really appreciate that too. And we hope that some of the ideas and thoughts and inspirations that you have heard here will be helpful to strengthen ourselves and in the process be able to strengthen our children.